From Cortland, New York, America's smallest small city, it's the Nerd Bomber Podcast, featuring the best news, entertainment, and related discussion that pop culture has to offer. And now, your hosts and experts in anti-social media, Just Jamie and your friend Claude! Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I'm your friend Claude, here, as always, with...
Just Jamie.
And on today's episode, we'll be discussing all things Thanksgiving. But first, let's catch up on what has been going on for us lately. What say you, sir?
Well, it's a topic we've already covered a couple times, but I've been watching more Disney Plus.
Huh.
It's kind of the only new thing going on. I've been starting to revisit classic animated movies that I thought I was familiar with, but when I actually sit down and watch them beginning to end, I realize there's a lot of stuff I've forgotten and haven't seen since I was, well, I haven't seen in a long enough time that, like I said, I've forgotten it. So it's been kind of interesting to revisit and re-experience these things.
And plus there's, you know, as also as we've mentioned a few times on the show, there's such a diverse and deep well of content on Disney Plus. So it's going to take a while to even get to the stuff that you remember, let alone maybe discovering some things that you might have overlooked or forgotten about.
Right. I mean, a decision to sit and watch a particular thing is going to be based on, like, how recently have I seen this? How well do I know it? Do I want to have a novel experience? So the one that sticks out lately is I watched Sleeping Beauty. And again, I thought I remembered this better than I actually did. I had this idea in my head that Sleeping Beauty looked different visually, which it does. But the idea that I had in my head that I had formed on my own, having not seen it for decades, was that the reason it looked different, the reason that it had a stylized visual appearance, was that it was maybe a lower budget production than some of the things that had come before it, such as Cinderella or Pinocchio or what have you. And boy, did I have that wrong. Clearly, anybody who knows, anybody who's familiar, Sleeping Beauty looks different because I think it is superior to the things that came before it and still ranks as one of the best looking Disney animated, especially among the traditionally animated movies that they've done.
I concur. It just seems like they pulled out all the stops and really put in some effort and time. And of course, at this point, I'm wishing that I had researched it more recently, because while I spent much of my youth obsessing over the finer points of everything Disney in terms of animation, my knowledge is not readily available in my brain, but I just remember that seeing that the art style was kind of based off of the designs of stained glass, like kind of like that come to life or whatever.
Yeah, some of it is. Some of like the animated figures are. A lot of the backgrounds have a Renaissance painting background mixed with like Art Deco almost. Like the tops of trees are square.
Right.
It's very almost surrealistic, but it's so lush that you just accept it as part of the universe. The other part of it is that it's one of the last sort of smooth-lined animated features of the classic Disney era, because after this, they switched to Xerox technology, and they would take pencils and directly Xerox them and color the pencils.
Right.
And so you see a lot of sketchiness in the things that came after. That's not to say that a lot of the things that came after Sleeping Beauty didn't look great, but they had a sketchiness to them. And the other thing is that they did pull out all the stops, as you said earlier, to this movie. And in doing so, this movie was a financial failure.
Yeah.
At the time, which is more common in Disney's history than people might realize. A lot of their movies didn't make money, and a lot of them struggled, especially in the first few decades. So with everything they poured into this one, it's no surprise that, one, they found cheaper animation styles to use after this. And two, kind of didn't go all in on some of the things that they did for Sleeping Beauty. After Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, kind of comes the territory when you're breaking new ground and being an innovator in your industry. And wasn't it Snow White even? Wasn't that the one that was referred to as Disney's Folly when they made that?
I'd have to look it up to be sure. I mean, it's essentially the first feature-length animated movie, and I think a lot of people doubted that they could make that work at the time.
Boy, were they proven wrong.
Holy cow. No kidding. But it took a while.
Yeah, classic Disney is always the best Disney, in my opinion. As far as what I've been doing lately, I've been having many Thanksgivings and watching a lot of wrestling, both of which we'll discuss in greater detail later in this very show. That will bring us to this week's installment of
3, 2, 1.
This is the part of the show where we pick three of the biggest current pop culture headlines and rank them as we see fit. Starting us off at number 3 this week, the upcoming Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover special between all of the CW's superhero shows. They do this, not this exact version, but they do a crossover event every year. This one will be the biggest one they've done yet. And some of the things that are making that happen are the sheer amount and recognizability of some of the guest stars being brought in for this. Tell us more, Jamie.
Well, they definitely seem to be pulling out all the stops in this one, that's for sure. In addition to the regular cast of those shows, which include Supergirl, Batwoman, The Flash, Arrow, and DC's Legends of Tomorrow, they've done a lot of, I don't want to call it stunt casting, but I mean, that's essentially what it is. They're bringing in Kevin Conroy as Bruce Wayne slash Batman. Kevin Conroy, of course, is the voice actor who has played Batman slash Bruce Wayne in many, many different iterations of the character, animated series, video games, etc.
And so, this will be his first live action foray, right?
Yes, this is very true. The first time he's played the character in live action, and judging by one production still that we see, it definitely seems to be a version of Bruce Wayne pulled from the graphic novel Kingdom Come, where he was aged and his body is so beat up that he essentially wears an exoskeleton of all times to sort of be functional. Also on the show, we've got Brandon Routh, who is already on DC's Legends of Tomorrow as Ray Palmer slash the Atom. He is going to play Clark Kent slash Superman. And much like Kevin Conroy's version of Batman, this seems to be pulled from a visual standpoint from the graphic novel Kingdom Come. His symbol has a black background. He has little gray streaks in his temples. And it's a much more, except for the black and the symbol, the rest of the costume is much more of a classic Superman look than we see elsewhere in the CW DC universe. So that's something that people have been keeping an eye on, because of course Brandon Routh played Superman in the ill-fated and maybe a little bit misunderstood and underappreciated Superman Returns film. Also, we have Tom Welling, who also played Clark Kent, never got around to playing Superman in the show Smallville. He is cast as Clark Kent, maybe Superman, we don't know yet. And one of the other big ones is none other than the Burt Ward, who played Robin slash Dick Grayson in the 1966 Batman series alongside the late Adam West, which that kind of caught a lot of people by surprise, because it's not like Burt Ward plays Senator so-and-so, as we were talking about before we went on the air. It's Burt Ward playing Dick Grayson. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But that's kind of like a lot of the casting is what's caught a lot of the attention, that they really are, like you said earlier, pulling out all the stops. And this is a 5-part crossover. Now that CW has a 5th superhero show, Batwoman, starring Ruby Rose, they're doing this over the course of 5 different shows. So it starts Sunday, December 8th with Supergirl, runs the following Monday with Batwoman, then goes to Tuesday with The Flash, then it goes on hiatus and comes back in January, and they do the finale in 2 straight shows in one night, Arrow and DC's Legends of Tomorrow. So I personally have not been watching the CW superhero shows. It's just so much to catch up on and keep up on all these different shows. It's hard. But I will definitely be watching this crossover.
Yeah, I also have fallen out of kind of following along with any of these shows. I was really big into The Flash and Supergirl, and even Legends of Tomorrow in its first, probably half of the first season. And I haven't watched a single episode of any of them at all this season, and maybe only saw half of last season's stuff.
Yeah, same.
But every time they do one of these, yeah, this is something to really get excited about. And this year is no different. In fact, it seems to be their biggest amount of guest stars and also their biggest in scope in terms of story that they're kind of covering. And one of the other reasons for me to get and stay excited is last year's crossover event saw John Wesley Shipp return to the 1990 version of Flash that he kind of like made famous and kind of started off this TV live action superhero thing. And it seems like they're bringing him back in that role again for this, which made me happy to see.
I did miss last year's crossover. I mean, I could probably go back and find all the different episodes, but I am looking forward to seeing that in this year's crossover because I missed it last year.
Yeah, it should be pretty cool. Speaking of battles taking place across multiple networks, in the world of wrestling, we've covered the head-to-head ratings war that has existed ever since the launch of AEW on TNT, being pitted against WWE's NXT show on USA every Wednesday. And for the last 7 weeks, AEW has consistently won that war. This past week, however, NXT finally took the top spot.
One more for the good guys.
It's pretty clear. I mean, well, again, you always have to kind of stand back and see what's going to happen long term or midterm or whatever. But WWE has really pulled out all the stops the last few weeks leading up to their Survivor Series pay-per-view, which has just passed us by as we record.
Right.
And so you can't help but wonder if some of the reason why the ratings were bumped on NXT is because of all of these crossovers they were doing between NXT and their Raw and SmackDown brands. So you kind of, for a couple weeks on WWE programming, you never really knew who was going to show up and when. And I think that sort of, it might have drawn some extra viewers. We have to wait and see. This could trend, and this could be the way that it continues on with NXT kind of holding on to a lead over AEW. But part of the reason I think that it happened, at least this week, is due to all of this invasion angle they were doing leading up to the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. And I think that's kind of the prevailing mentality of industry pundits as well. And essentially, it seems like they created the closest thing to the modern version of appointment television just so you could kind of, get to see who was going to pop up, if anybody.
Yeah, I think they got as much mileage as they could out of the whole idea because by the end of it, they just had 50 wrestlers, characters, whatever you want to say, in one big messy battle at the end of it going into the pay-per-view. So I think that all of these crossovers have probably run their course, at least in the short term. One important factor in this ratings thing is that even though NXT beat AEW this past week in the overall ratings, AEW did still hold the lead in the 18 to 49 demographic, which even in this day and age, when the idea of ratings is a little bit antiquated because people watch and consume programming in so many different ways, that demographic is still looked at as the most important source from which to draw viewers.
And money from their pockets.
Yes, exactly.
Speaking of emptying pockets, coming in at number one this week is Frozen 2 setting all kinds of box office records.
It's true. I have a list of records that Frozen 2 grabbed onto over a three-day weekend this past weekend. First, the biggest global opening of all time for an animated film. That's kind of a big deal.
Huh, yeah. Little accomplishment.
So the global box office is both domestic, North American, and international all combined. It pulled in $358.2 million in 3 days. That beats the previous record holder, Toy Story 4, from earlier this year, which pulled in $240.9 million. That's over $100 million difference. So that's a big jump. The next one is they had the top international opening of all time for an animated film. That is, that's basically everything except the domestic box office. And that number is $228.2 million. Again, it's a big win because the previous, which is hard to believe, was 2009's Ice Age Dawn of the Dinosaurs, of all things. And that number was $152 million. So that's a $70 million-plus dollar jump. The next one, they have the biggest domestic November opening for an animated film at $130 million. That beats 2013's Frozen, the first Frozen film, which made $93 million over a five-day holiday weekend. So that's a 30-something million dollar jump and two fewer days to make the money. It had the biggest IMAX opening for an animated film at $18 million, and it has the third biggest domestic animated opening of all time at, that's, again, that's domestic, third biggest of all time, $130 million. It ranks behind Disney, Pixar Disney's Incredibles 2, which made $182.7 million, and Finding Dory, which made $135.1 million. Now, the thing to remember is both of those were summer releases. And summer releases usually have a financial advantage in the box office, so it's still kind of impressive that this movie's in third place. And again, that's only domestic numbers. And the last one I have here is it is the top 3-day domestic opening for Walt Disney Animation Studios, beating 2016's Zootopia. So that's a pretty big deal. It is making a ton of money. It's pretty much guaranteed to hit the $1 billion mark. You definitely can't deny its cultural impact, especially since it's been 6 years since the original. And that's a little bit of a wait, although for an animated sequel, that's kind of expected because it does take a long time for an animated movie to go from concept to reality.
Wow. I think my brain is frozen after trying to digest all the numbers involved in that story. So I'm going to just let it go. That'll bring 3-2-1 Pop to a close for this week. And now it's time for the main topic. Thanksgiving is just a few days away at this point. And in honor of that event, we would like to discuss and share our favorite pop culture-based Thanksgiving traditions in our respective families. Starting, of course, most every year, with the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Obviously, this is the most ubiquitous part of most people's Thanksgiving. Probably not the event proper, but, you know, like the first part of Thanksgiving Day when you're kind of just getting up and having to confront the reality of impending arrival of family members that you may or may not enjoy conversing with for the next 8 hours. Some of my favorite parade memories are kind of, you know, as a kid, of course, you're looking forward to seeing, like, you know, Spider-Man or like a superhero balloon that you identify with, or a performance of a musical or something. So you turn the channel and like, isn't there like a Garfield special on or something? And then like, you know, maybe not, but by the time you come back, maybe the Garfield balloon will be coming down the street. One of my favorites though was a little more recent, I think probably within the last 5 or so years, when there was I forget the name of the actual property of characters, but there was, it was like a float, it wasn't a balloon, that was coming down and doing like some goofy kids show song. And then they do like this fake record scratch in the middle of it. And a live, honest to God, Rick Rolling happened. Rick Astley himself pops out of the inside of it and starts singing Never Gonna Give You Up. Ba, 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 ba.
Who love me till the end. People, let me tell you about him. He's so much fun. Whether we're
I missed that somehow. I regret missing that.
I happened to just catch it. I was at my girlfriend's mother's house at the time, and they had this little tiny TV in the kitchen counter. And I just happened to look over at the right time, and I was just like, wow, I can't believe they pulled that off.
That's funny.
Very cool.
It is something that is always kind of just in the background of my Thanksgiving experience. I mean, I would definitely sit and watch it with, you know, intently, but at other times it's just kind of always on, even if I'm not paying attention to it. My Thanksgiving mornings were usually focused on getting ready for departure rather than the arrival of people. We rarely had Thanksgiving at our house. Sometimes Thanksgiving would be a busy time. It became much busier as I grew to be an adult. You have different families. Everybody wants a visit. You go for Thanksgiving lunch to one and then Thanksgiving dinner to the other. In recent years, it's actually simplifying back down to a more basic experience. My memories of the parade, I can't think of any particular things. I know that, for one, I'm always wondered, I want to say worried, but I'm always thinking about how cold some of the people must be in the outfits that they are asked to go out there and perform in on, you know, a late November morning in New York City.
Absolutely.
And another thing I'm always paying attention to is because the live musical acts are always lip syncing. They hold these big fake microphones with big red heads on them, and the musical guest will lip sync to their own music. And it's always funny to look for little hitches and mix-ups in the audio. A lot of times what they're hearing in their ear is not exactly equal to what's being played on the PA there, much less being fed through the TV feed. So that's always kind of fun to watch. I don't blame them for lip-syncing. I get it. They're on the move. It's impossible to do anything else, really.
Right.
And again, yeah, the pop culture balloons was always, that's always kind of the thing when you're a kid. You're looking for the balloons, the big floats. It's kind of amazing now to see the exact same floats every year. There's always the same turkey float. And it's just funny to see those same things pop up again and again and again.
Yeah, with that turkey one, I'm to this day, it's like you said, it's been the same. But I always react to it the same way, even now. I'm mesmerized by its eyes, its giant eyes that never blink at the same time. It's like one's like fluttering half closed while the other one's coming back down. It's really funny, but that's the thing I zero in on every time it comes on screen.
I also think it's funny because there's like a TV camera. There's a place where all the performances and a lot of things, they come to a kind of a stop and they perform there for TV. And I always think it's really interesting because, you know, they want it to look good. So there's a big crowd. But that crowd is always looking at the back of the performance.
Yeah.
It actually reminds me of wrestling. We were talking about wrestling a few minutes ago, where there's always a, what they call a hard camera on one side of the ring. And whenever wrestlers are, you know, talking to the camera, when they come out, they put their arms in the air, they hold the belt up, whatever it is, they're being introduced. They're always facing away from thousands of people because they have to perform for the camera. And I always think that when I watch like a live performance, like you said, of a high school band or a college band or part of a musical from a play, they're always performing with their backs to this, like, you know, hundreds of people that are behind them.
And like you said, it is kind of funny to see the contrast when you know it's freezing out and Al Roker standing there bundled up to his neck with a hat on and earmuffs or whatever, and then the cast of The Lion King's right behind him in leotards.
I know. It's got to be a little bit of a challenge. But I mean, overall, I mean, I'm like picking on some stuff right now. But I always just kind of, I do like to watch the parade. It's a good, wholesome thing, and I still enjoy it to this day.
Yeah, it makes you feel good, and it's fun to mock. It's win-win.
So the next thing for me is you know, kind of the very traditional, least traditional in the last maybe 50 years of Thanksgiving Day football. I'll sit and watch those games. Very rarely my favorite team is the Buffalo Bills. I'm a long-suffering Bills fan. I just can't convince myself to root for any other team. It's annoying because I'm just rooting for the logo and the laundry, even though different players and coaches pass through. But anyway, I do sit and watch Thanksgiving football every year, and I have done the occasional go outside and play some touch football or some flag football, you know, before we eat or after you eat or in between or whatever. So I have done some of that too. So it's kind of a very traditional, unsurprising thing, but it's definitely been a huge part of my Thanksgiving experience since childhood up until the present. And my beloved Buffalo Bills do happen to have a Thanksgiving Day game this year. So that has the potential to ruin things for me.
Well, after the parade comes to an end and Santa Claus appears, my Thanksgiving is usually spent avoiding football. I've also played it a few times over the years, however. But as far as watching it, that's kind of my cue to either start channel surfing or, you know, start cooking in more recent years. However, what has kind of always been an accidental or an unrealized tradition in my family's Thanksgiving has been the viewing of one type or another of, I guess, what you could consider to be like an epic movie or like a big franchise movie or, you know, something along those lines. When I was a really young kid, probably second grade, it was E.T. And I don't know if Cousin Adam remembers, but we had Thanksgiving together one year. We were watching E.T. And I'll never forget that when E.T.'s chest lit up in the dark, Adam said, nice lips. For whatever reason, I can't forget that he always thought that was his lips. And some years it's been, you know, Wizard of Oz. Some years it's been Superman. I think my first viewing of the Superman movies with Christopher Reeve happened around Thanksgiving time. And then in later years, probably like my later teen years, it became different Star Wars movies. I remember one year watching Empire Strikes Back. And also, Cousin Adam, since he isn't here to chime in, I can just talk about him. he got horribly sick. I think he ended up having thrush.
Oh, God.
And we were watching The Empire Strikes Back when it kind of all hit him. And then kind of a little shortly after, James Bond became the movie series to watch around Thanksgiving time. And, you know, at this point, you could watch one every year for the next 30 years and never repeat one.
That is crazy.
But yeah, that's just kind of usually the time of year I see those kinds of movies, and I look forward to doing it again this year.
Yeah, I don't have the movie tradition, that's for sure. I don't really have... The football thing kind of dominates. I mean, part of it's me watching. Part of it is we're at some big family event. My family does tend to gather in large numbers, and most of the people want to watch football, and that just kind of is what happens. I do have, for some reason, I do have a lot of relatives that are Cowboys fans, and for some reason, the Cowboys always play on Thanksgiving, so it's either fun or miserable for them every single year. I don't have any viewing traditions. You know, once upon a time, the Garfield Thanksgiving special would be on, and I would definitely watch that, but it sort of fell by the wayside pretty quickly. The one Garfield special that lived on was the Christmas special, of course.
Right.
Garfield had very good Halloween and Thanksgiving specials, but they didn't quite have the longevity of the Christmas one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Charlie Brown one too. There's a few others, and yeah, none of them really were kept around as long as all of the respective Christmas ones, unfortunately.
Yeah, now I like to watch the SNL Thanksgiving special, which is just a compilation of Thanksgiving themed sketches over the years, and that tends to be pretty funny. SNL is very good as a compilation show.
Definitely.
Very few single episodes are hilarious from beginning to end. Some people are way overcritical about it, but it's a live show. They do it every week. It's impossible to be funny from beginning to end. People remember, I don't want to go off on a tangent on SNL here, but people remember certain eras of the show being more hilarious than others, but it's nostalgia sneaking into your memory. Because no single episode of SNL is hilarious from beginning to end. But when you start compiling the best sketches, all of a sudden it seems hilarious. And the Thanksgiving special is one that I've definitely watched a lot, especially in recent years. And it's always pretty good.
Do any of the individual Thanksgiving skits stand out for you?
Well, there's Paul Simon walking out in the turkey costume trying to convince everybody that he looks stupid. And then there's a sketch with, it's like Will Ferrell, Chris Parnell, Chris Kattan. I think Juliana Margulies was the guest. And there's this whole thing about how the kids can't chew their own food for some reason. So the parents, it's Molly Shannon too, they chew up the food and they spit it into their kids' mouths.
Perfect.
And the actors do this on screen. And Juliana Margulies plays the girlfriend of one of the kids, who's an adult man, but, you know, he's still the son of the parents. And she doesn't realize that this happens, and then in order to prove her love and be a part of her family, she does it too. But the funny thing is that Chris Kattan is one of the characters getting chewed food spat into his mouth, and the actor finds it disgusting and can barely hold it together. It's like, that's a heck of a sketch to be in if you think it's gross.
Nathan? I would love to chew this apple pie for you.
Yay! Yay! Apple pie!
So that one sticks out to me, and I'm sure there are others that are hilarious as well.
For me, it would have to be the Crystal Pepsi commercial parody, Crystal Gravy.
This is all so good, yes.
Can't you hear the wife and say? crystal gravy. You've never seen a gravy like this.
They're just pouring like corn syrup onto the potatoes.
Yeah, to the same Van Halen song as the real commercial, and just making it very dramatic.
That is very good.
You know, mouthfuls of this stuff.
Oh, God.
Good times. That's kind of an unappetizing food, but what are some of your favorite foods on Thanksgiving that you actually enjoy eating?
It all.
no, everything
except for cranberry sauce. I don't go for the cranberry sauce.
Oh.
We always have green bean casserole. I don't go for that either. Everything else, I'm all about the starches, to be honest with you. Potatoes. My mom makes some killer sweet potatoes and stuffing. The turkey is essentially a garnish for me when it comes to my plate, and then gravy over the whole bit. One of my favorite, I'll jump to you before I go forward. What are some of yours?
I'm not necessarily a potato and potatoes man. I like a little bit of everything. It's a very healthy attitude towards meat in general. Meat should be treated like a garnish on everybody's plate. However, I just can't seem to make myself follow that rule. Turkey is a big deal for me, especially dark meat. Usually the drumstick is saved for me, or at least one of them. Recently, I have been cooking turkey, and I have discovered the method known as spatchcocking, which is basically cutting out the backbone and flattening out the entire turkey so that it takes a quarter of the time and cooks more evenly.
Wow, nice.
And I will never go back to another way. We also have always, in our family, kind of had... my aunt makes these squash rolls from scratch that are pretty nice. And we always have like white corn for some reason.
Hmm.
And it's just not the same without it.
Another thing is, got to talk about desserts. I also enjoy all of the desserts. Usually there's kind of like a selection of pies. There'll be peanut butter, chocolate, pumpkin. And usually I have a little bit of everything. I have a sampler. But probably my favorite thing of Thanksgiving food is the leftovers. What I like to do is take them all, put them in the same bowl, covered in gravy, and that's how we eat the leftovers. And that is that's good stuff.
If only KFC hadn't stolen your idea and made all the money off of it.
I know.
Jerks. My overall favorite is probably stuffing. And I'm not too picky about it.
If I had to pick one, I would agree with you. Stuffing is the tops.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's not only is that starch, it's just got a little, if it's done right, it's got a little of everything in it. There's some kind of meat element, whether it's just like chicken stock cooked in it, or sometimes you get like little bits of meat in there, depending on who makes it. It's pretty good. As a kid, I used to insist on stovetop, but as an adult, I think homemade is probably the best when it's well done.
Apologies to the family member who used to make it this way. I don't think it really happens so much anymore, but I had somebody that would make stuffing in cupcake tins.
Oh.
And so you would have this little stuffing muffin.
Individual stuffings.
They were amazing.
Wow. That's pretty... I've never come across that. That's a great idea. The one version of it I will say is not for me is my aunt also makes an oyster stuffing. And I'm a seafood guy, but just not an oyster guy.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great.
Yeah. Dessert-wise, typically it's always been pecan pie for me. An apple, I suppose. You don't really usually have a ton of desserts. So those are kind of my main dessert memories.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite pies are Dutch apple, and my mom makes a great strawberry rhubarb. But
right. When
it comes to Thanksgiving, I like the pumpkin.
Yeah, it's a classic. I've never been a pumpkin pie guy, so you can have mine.
All right, fair enough.
Well, that will do it for this episode of the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I have been your friend Claude.
And I've been just Jamie.
And in honor of Thanksgiving, we'd like to wish everybody a happy National Day of Mourning.
Yay!
We'll see you next time.
Later!
Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey, 'cause it's good. Love to eat the turkey like a good boy should. Cause it's turkey to eat so good. A turkey for me, turkey for you. Let's eat turkey in a big brown shoe. Love to eat the turkey at the table. I once saw a movie with Betty Grable. Eat that turkey all night long. 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. Turkey, turkey D, turkey, turkey dap. I eat the turkey and I take a nap. Thanksgiving is a special night. Jimmy Walker used to say dynamite. That's right. Oh, I love turkey on Thanksgiving.